Good afternoon, family. At least it's afternoon here on Tuesday, January 30th, 2024. It's 2:41 in the afternoon. And Mom and I have just finished our little better than an hour study period on some of the skills that she's working on to improve her recovery from her left deficit. And we decided that another question we were going to choose was from Mikkel. Mikkel sent us, I think, four questions. And this one is, what are you most proud of in life? And I think I'm going to let Mom speak for herself here in a minute, but the most obvious one is the family. And we were talking about this before we actually started taping. And, excuse me, I had to set the timer. That's a simple answer, but it's a very complex answer. And so, Karen, what do you see? What are the qualities that, first of all, we look at our family and are so proud of them? And how did we get there?
How did we get there? Monica and I don't remember who all. I think two of her kids and I think Mikkel. We were all going for a walk anyway. And we saw this older lady walking
in front. This was in Cadillac, right?
Yeah, this was in Cadillac. We saw this older lady that was walking in front of us. And Gabe ran up and asked if he could carry her groceries for her. And we all went together, but it was him that initiated it. So we carried her groceries home, and she lived on the top floor of this apartment building, and it was over by Lake Cadillac. And so we all helped her carry the groceries up the stairs and opened the door, carried her groceries in, and she was very appreciative. And then when we left, the kid said, gosh, that's too bad she had to do that all by herself and all that. And so then we thought, what could we do for her? So when everybody was in on this decision that why don't we go get her some groceries and take up to her? And so we talked about it, and we decided instead of us buying her groceries, maybe we should just go to, I think it was the IGA that was in St. Louis, right?
In St. Louis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I know. It wasn't. We were in Cadillac.
Yeah.
What was that store's name? Ashcraft? No.
No, it had been in Ashcraft's. Rick? No, not Rick's. I don't know. It's the only one downtown there.
Okay. So anyway, we decided maybe we'd go in there and we'd purchase a gift certificate and let her pick out what kind of food she liked or what she needed. And so we got a gift certificate and we all took it back upstairs to her and just told her, here's a gift certificate for you to, we were going to buy you some things, but we decided we'd let you pick out what groceries you needed. And so we gave it to her and she was very, very grateful, but I think the most happiness I think that we felt probably better about all this, including the kids, than she did getting the gift certificate. Just, you felt good about yourself that you were helping somebody. I mean, not only taking up the groceries, but being kind enough to give her a gift that she could use for groceries. Period. That means cut it off.
Well, I think, you know, that's a good story. And I remember when you guys came back and told me that story touched me too. And it emphasizes the point, at least in my mind, it's a lesson that it took me quite a while to learn. But life is not about me. Life is about we. And we go through life holding the hands of so many people that we count on to help us in our times of need, people that we respect, whether they're family members, which in our case are primarily, but also other people, like-minded people, that help us grow. And how much did you guys, you and Monica and the kids, grow from that experience in terms of your awareness? I remember Tracy and Jim one Thanksgiving going over to the church in Alma, and they spent Thanksgiving Day serving others, and we were listening to them, how excited they were to go and how proud all of them were.
We went with them too.
Were we?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. We were there.
Tracy and Jim and their family and you and I.
Yeah, that's right. And it was nice. I mean, obviously serving those needy people was a very rewarding act in itself, but doing it together helped our family, or that part of our family. I don't know how you can learn feelings and develop ties like that without going through those kinds of experiences. So when people I know are constantly complimenting us, and this isn't a complaint by any means, on what a beautiful family we have, it's because as a family we have done or experienced together the giving aspect of helping those who are less fortunate, or maybe it's just holding their hand when they're going through a tough time. But the idea is, it's not about me, it's about us. And I know I am. I absolutely love when our family gets together. Watching the interaction of our family with each other, it looks like everybody is really excited and happy to be there. They're interested in what's gone on in the lives of the other family members. I know they share advice, and just seeing the interaction, there's just a generation of a lot of love that makes me want to say, gosh, I want to be a part of this. This is good. How do I know? Because I feel good when I see it. And I'm experiencing more happiness, particularly happiness that is lasting, than if I went to the store and bought myself a present, because eventually the newness of that present wears out. But here we are all these years later, remembering and reflecting back on these experiences that were instrumental in us developing our own family love for each other.
And another thing, the children look out for each other. When somebody else, one of them, is hurting, you know, they all gather around to find out what happened and kind of talk them out of whatever problem they're having. Sometimes it was with a friend at school. Sometimes it was just a personal problem that they were having. But everybody was helpful in sharing with a solution.
And I guess another aspect of this is that it doesn't have to be some grand gesture. One thing that I'm especially proud of is that every one of our children and grandchildren have become involved in athletics. And I know when I was their age, my experience for my father and mother, but also what Mom and Dad were teaching me, because I was the product of a Catholic education, both high school, grade school, high school, and college. The values that I learned playing primarily football and hockey were, it took me into my early 20s before I realized that, yeah, I learned some skills at being a goalie or how to play Canadian football rules, but it was more than that, because I learned that I was one, if it was on our football team, I was one member of 12 guys. Canadian football teams have 12 players. And that I had to depend on each one of those other guys doing their job. And in return, they could count on me. So I learned accountability. I learned responsibility. I learned dependability. And those qualities were the main reasons I wanted to coach. And I said, okay, what do I have to do to coach? Well, at that time, you had only teachers could coach. They didn't have community people involved in high school programs. And by the time I got done with my professional preparation, by that time, I had a lot of friends that were coaching at the college and even in the National Football League. And I wanted to coach college football, not so much for the glory or glamour of coaching football, but because it would give me an opportunity to give back to all the students and athletes that I would come in contact with, the lessons about life that I had learned, that lessons that helped me lead what I consider a very good life, a very rewarding life, because of the values I had learned in athletics. And so when I look at, you know, at all of them, you know, Shannon and I remember learning that she was such a competitor. And sometimes Mr. Kristen pushed her button too far, and then we would have to talk. She was such a competitor that I couldn't coach her. She wouldn't let me coach her. She had to have Bob Morris coach her in basketball. But that was okay with me because he was a much better basketball coach than I was, and helped Shannon significantly. But I also remember Michael. He was a competitor too. And I will never forget the time I happened to be coaching freshman basketball when Michael was a freshman. And that was a real honor for me too, was having the ability to coach my own children so that they could see what we did around the house had carryover into our athletic life. And likewise, what some of the skills we were learning in athletics, there were not opportunities to learn that at home. So they were developing a different skill set. But I remember the one time Michael had almost an uncontrollable temper.
And, like his father.
You know, yeah, like his dad. And he got called for a foul that he didn't think he committed. And he slammed the basketball that he was holding in his hand when the red, blue, whistled down on the floor so hard it bounced up and hit the roof of the gym on the inside, which promptly earned him a technical foul from the referee. And then he knew that was only the beginning, because by the time he got to the sideline, I was ready to separate his head from the rest of his body. And we had a long talk after the game. And eventually, Michael learned, probably more so and better than I ever did. Michael was so much like me, it was scary. And that's exactly how I was when I competed. I didn't have any friends, including teammates, even at practice. I just wanted to compete. And so that qualities, or those qualities of teamwork and competition, and the idea that I'm only one member, and I can do only what I have been, God has given me the ability to do. And I'm going to put that into the pot. And if everybody, all the other members on the team put into the pot what skills they have, then that pot is going to be a real bank account for each and every one of us to use. And that carries over into life as a family. When we work as a team and function as a team, and each one of us has individual skills to contribute. So that's why I especially enjoy watching our children and now our grandchildren compete, because that gene, I think every one of our children and grandchildren is a competitor and have learned in developing that competitive atmosphere, they've developed a work ethic that they can set goals and they can work to achieve those goals. And they don't make excuses like so many people do. They are accountable for their own actions and they have the self-integrity and the self-honesty to look at what they're, listen to those people that know what they're doing and why they're doing it, that can help them and get better. And they all do that and improve as a person. I just asked, I was just asking Mom on the side if she had something to contribute to that. And she laughed and said, no, I'm still reliving your life now. So pardon us while I get going on this, because I am so proud of all of you and our family, obviously. And this is the how. How did we develop this family? Well, that's how we did it, by loving each other unconditionally, supporting each other, rooting for each other, advising each other, holding each other accountable, knowing that they can go to any family member and they're going to get an honest answer that is based on love and not for any personal gain for that other family member, not for any selfish reason like I told you so, but answers and advice and support out of love, simply because you're my brother, you're my sister, you're my cousin. Okay, I'm sorry.
And the other thing is just by showing good example, because I think the kids really watch what we do and how we do it and what we say and how we handle adversity. Do we get hot and mad, or do we kill them with kindness?
Yeah, I think that is a very key point. We are all teachers, not just the people that work in classrooms. And you think about the people, and you adults, you think about the people that you work with. Think about the people that you really respect and somebody that does something well and has a skill maybe that you don't. And it's your action is generally one of, that's a great skill. What are they doing? What's something that I can learn from them, as opposed to feelings of jealousy that I'm better than they and this other thing. I think that attitude is extremely important.
Building everybody else up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, complimenting them for their, not just natural talent, but their integrity and the things that are really going to carry them through life.
And that brings us, you know, Karen is also the product of a Catholic education. And I know when we were, my high school Latin teacher, my senior year, was the priest that married Karen and I. And he was that snow white Irish cultured, hard-nosed guy. I remember him. I sat at the back. We had about 40 boys in his. We had an apologetics class my senior year, and he taught it. Father Sheehan was his name. And he was, I don't even know if he was as tall as I was, but he had a bark, he had a bark that sounded vicious. I remember one time, the kid sitting behind me, I sat near the back of the room, the kid tapped me on the shoulder and was saying something while Father Sheehan was talking. And all Father Sheehan saw was me kind of turn around so I could hear what the kid behind me was saying. And he said, McCloskey, if you don't turn around and pay attention to me, I'm going to come back there and knock your teeth down your throat. That was the kind of guy that he was. And I loved him for it because I knew that he was our he was the priest that slept on the floor of grade 12 and 13ers at Assumption in our dorms. And, you know, we ate meals with him and we prayed with him and just loved the guy. And he sat down with Karen and I before we got married and said, as a personal friend, I can tell you that one of the keys, and I hope you remember this, Karen, him saying, and I don't have the exact words, but if you keep Christ in your marriage, you will have a long, successful, and happy life. And that, I'm paraphrasing what he said, but that was so true. All the different encounters that we had in life, it wasn't a case of what would Christ do. It was an intuitive, instinctive reaction because of the values that our parents and our Catholic educators had taught us, that we got through those tough times and made, you know, we didn't get an instruction book with, here's how you act or respond in these kinds of situations. And you more so than me, you were my little nun from St. Mary's of Redford, my Saint Karen. I was still a bandit learning how to get my wings to get me into heaven. But I think having our Catholic faith as the center of our life and as the basis for our decisions and our actions was the key success. Would you agree?
Yes, I think I've told all of our children and grandchildren at some time, whatever you do, keep Christ the center, and everything else will go good. Keep Christ the center of your life.
And you know, just one other little thing. Again, I went to a Catholic elementary school, Catholic high school, in a Catholic college. And so I was in church, in a Catholic church from, well, I was an altar boy for many years. Well, right, Jim Ahern and I were altar boys here at St. Paul as grown men in the community. And so I've always had somewhat of an involvement in the Catholic faith. But it wasn't until we started to grow our own family that the importance of what we learned in our Catholic faith became apparent to me. In other words, a lot of religions, no, I am saying this wrong. People go to church every Sunday, let's say, and they expect that because they went to church that day, that they are fulfilling their requirement to please God, to do the right thing, that when their time comes to give an accounting of themselves. They're going to get in to get into heaven. And what I've come to learn is, no, that's not how it works. That you have to go out and aggressively look for Christ and not expect to find him for 1 hour a week or to be entertained when you go to Mass, because life isn't entertaining. You know, you got to get out there and you got to compete and you got to look. And if you are really, truly looking for Christ and doing his work, you know, look at the kinds of people that Christ spent his entire life, that he was crucified for. He helped the prostitutes. He helped the murderers. He helped the people that had no food. He helped the lowest of the low in their society. And so he came to show everyone that even the lowest of our societies over the course of time have value. And if you will help them, or help not just them, but the other people in your lives that are struggling, they don't know Christ, or they don't have a focus and they're wandering around in the darkness. And if you can help them, that's doing the work of Christ. Well, I think I've gone past my time. I mean, we could go on and on and on. But that's a great question, Mikkel, and caused some really nice discussion between Mom and I. And we're always happy to talk about our family and how proud we are of them and all the qualities that we like. So this is just a small portion. And know that you are all loved unconditionally. You don't have to be a good athlete. You don't have to be a beautiful girl or a handsome young man or the most intelligent. You just have to be yourself and be a servant of God. And you have our unconditional love, just like he gives it to us. So, any last words, Mom?
We love you all very much, and we're proud of all of you.
So we'll be answering another question here sometime in the near future. I hope you are enjoying these. Love you all.